The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through.
Oh.
That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
You're very welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. It's Six Nations Week and Ireland take on Wales on Saturday in the Aviva Stadium, or Lansdowne Road, depending on how you're feeling these last couple of weeks. And it's a big one. To talk us through this busy rugby week, I'm joined in studio by Sports Joe reporter Pat McCarry. Pat, how are you?
Good morning and congratulations on cap number 50, Andy.
Cap number 50, yes it is. Thank you very much.
We'll add in sound effects there to make that sound more impressive.
Thanks for this giant award. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined in studio by a man who broke Irish hearts on more than one occasion. It's former Welsh winger Shane Williams, who'll join us to talk about the game this weekend. And Pat, you're on your bike this week. You're speaking to Tadhg Furlong.
Yeah, he was in top form. Just kind of spoke to him about growing up in Wexford and
helping out his father.
Yeah, in the butchers. So yeah. I know, good chat with him. Yeah,
yeah. So that's coming up later on in the show. And before we move on, congratulations to Colin Parkinson's JAR.
Yeah,
they
well
won
done, lads.
Podcast of the year at the Digital Media Awards. Well done. We're really happy for you.
Yeah, great stuff, lads.
We may have also been nominated. We did not win.
We were nominated,
yeah.
And you know, some would say there was some shenanigans going on.
We're not bitter. I just want to make that absolutely clear.
No, the lads, they've done all right. You know.
Well, they've been around that long. They should be winning awards.
Well, that's it. Yeah, and if they weren't winning awards, they should be having a long, hard look
at themselves.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well done.
Again, well done. Yeah.
Yeah. Damien Brown. There's
yes.
a winner.
Now there's a winner.
Yeah.
There's a guy who wins stuff and gets a job done.
64 days solo across the Atlantic. That's 64 days alone with your own thoughts now. That's
yeah,
never mind the physical aspect. That could do me in.
Yeah. Oh, he did amazingly, didn't he? Like to set off, and I was impressed with the beard that he had when he got back on dry land after those 64 days of hard ass rowing there.
And strong beard.
Yeah, it was good work and some great comments from him when he landed, and just the feat that would take, like, not only physical but as you said, mental as well, to kind of be with yourself and all those doubts that would be creeping in on certain days.
See, you'd have a few dark nights of the soul. You have to respect that effort. I said physically and mentally, well done, Damien Brown.
Mm.
And then I suppose we had a couple of the games over the weekend were.
Some disastrous results. And we're so used to weekends where you could have a clean sweep of the Irish provinces winning in the Pro 14, but complete disasters for the likes of Ulster and Connacht, both home games. Yeah,
we'll come back to that in a second. First thing, Ireland injury news. We're in a reasonable place. There's still not. No, we've no epidemic.
Yeah.
Here, which is good. We've got the Tadhg Furlong. What did that look like to you now on the ground this week? Is he definitely in the mix?
Yeah. I was they headed to Dewbury Park there in Athlone last week, and we went along and went in on that training session. It was great to see him getting out there, and 21 lads were brought down and three of them didn't train at all: Ian Henderson, Tadhg Furlong and James Ryan. So, but the one that, like, James Ryan didn't do anything, like, he was apart from, like, you know, posing for photos and signing autographs, which would be, you know, great for the kids and stuff, but he didn't
posing.
James Ryan would hate me to say something like that, but
was he going like full Zoolander?
He was just pulling the blue steel out.
Yeah.
And but you've seen Henderson and Furlong were both did a bit of sprints, a bit of runs and stuff, so kept loose. So I would say that those two will be all right. Not 100% certain about James Ryan, but I think he just has the kind of physique and the makeup where they just have to put a low workload on him as well. So I think Joe would love to have him, but then Devon Toner isn't a bad guy to call on if we need him. But I think Furlong and Henderson would be in that team at the weekend, and Ryan, maybe he has to probably train fully today and tomorrow to give himself a shout. And then we lost Luke McGrath then at the weekend. Kind of it looked nasty enough when you saw it, kind of twinge his knee, and he had scored a try again, captain in Leinster. Like, for me, he would have been on the bench. So I don't think there's any kind of official diagnosis or prognosis of what's up with him, but definitely out of the Six Nations, and I don't know if whether Leinster will get him back this season, which is an absolute shame for them because they've lost Van der Fleer, Henshaw, and now Luke McGrath during the Six Nations.
Well, fingers crossed he gets back a little sooner than that. I suppose the before we continue the Irish chat, the knock-on impact for Leinster is going to be potentially big because you have to pick Jameson Gibson Park.
Yeah.
Then, you know, with the greatest respect to Nick McCarthy, he's still fairly green. And then you have the which man do we drop? Is it Scott Fardy or is it James Lowe?
Yeah,
For me, you have to keep Fardy.
Yeah, you'd have to keep, and Fardy's been brilliant for them. And Lowe is almost the luxury then that you now can't afford to have.
Yeah.
So a bit of a disaster there, and but Jameson Gibson Park, he's good, not quite as good as Luke McGrath, but if he gets a run of games, he could do the job for him. But then, yeah, you're going to lose not only McGrath, but you're going to lose the likes of Lowe, who's. I was looking at him there, 6 games, 5 tries, 3 assists, and a lot of happy memories.
And a lot of bums on seats.
Yeah, brilliant.
There's a man who can put bums on seats.
Yeah.
Just there's playing against the very top teams, I think you can afford to leave him out. But you know, the stuff which I was talking to a friend this weekend, and we were talking about James Lowe, and I said, there's a reason why Kiwis are allowed leave, right? And we've already seen it with Lowe. We saw it in Montpellier, right? But against in a Pro 14 match, and you want to sell out that ground, no one cares about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody, right? They just want to say, what is going to do with the ball? How is he going to help someone else score? And he plays with a massive, big, shaggy dog grin on his face, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. But so that, I think Jack O'Toole from Sports Joe was at, looking at the game at the weekend and did a great piece on him and just saying exactly that. Like, he kind of brings joy to you when you're watching it, and you don't know what he's going to do next.
You can even see it on the big screen on the ground. Like, he's got just this giant grin when he's running along with the ball. It's amazing.
And he was good actually in the post-match interview as well. He was talking about Will Connors, and he was referring to him, he only knew him by his nickname, Porridge.
Porridge, yeah.
Which was brilliant as well.
Yeah, he probably doesn't know my name either. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really good. There's some really good stuff with them, with James Lowe after that game. I suppose before we move on move back to Ireland, Gary Ringrose. There is more noise about him coming straight in, having not played at all. Is that realistic, or are we, as we discussed last week with Jimmy Downey, is Chris Farrell the man for the job?
Yeah, Chris Farrell. Chris Farrell for me will start the game, and then you'll have. Probably Fergus McFadden will be the cover for him. But yeah, Ringrose, I think Schmidt would like to get it out there that Ringrose has a chance, because it just throws people off a little bit, and there's something else Wales have to worry
get
about.
Get the poor Welsh analyst working double time.
Yeah, just give him a little like, it's just throwing in a little bit of like a swerve at him as well. Like Ringrose, I think Schmidt was saying if he comes in and trains in the camp, he doesn't have to then prove to him that he can play, because he's done it before and he knows the calls and stuff. But it's a big ask for a guy to come back in after having 2 serious injuries in the space of the season's not over yet. So I think if they bring Ringrose in, they might get him in for training this week, so you could see him named. But I don't think he's going to play, and you could see him back in for the Scotland game. But this is Farrell's chance. He's played 2 games already. This will be his 3rd chance, and I'd say him and Aki will play. And then I suspect that Fergus McFadden is going to cover on the bench as well.
Graham, we'll talk more about Ireland-Wales with Master Williams when he joins us. So we mentioned Ulster, Munster, Connacht.
Yeah.
Bad results all around. A Zebre double over an Irish side is a significant thing. And one, I actually, if you take the Irish glasses off, it's brilliant. It's great to see. Treviso knocked up their 5th win in a row this weekend as well. Which included a win over Scarlets a couple of weekends ago. But Munster, disastrous start, 19-0 down in Cardiff.
Yeah, and they looked all over the place, and it was just so weird to see. Like, I know they had, I think Jack O'Donoghue was saying after the game that they had 10 changes, and it was one of those things where we've had 10 changes, but I'm not blaming it on that. Kind of one of those interviews that managers and captains often give.
It's not an excuse, but I just want to make sure I mention it.
Yeah, so, but they looked like they hadn't played together for a while, which is a shame to see. And Cardiff are really a weird team. Like, they can bring it 1 week and then just be absolutely atrocious the next week, but they were good. Nick Williams was brilliant on the day as well, and
he's annoying that way. When he's on his game, you know, he can be unplayable for stretches in a game.
Yeah, yeah. And he looks in good shape as well. Best shape I've seen him in a couple of years as well.
Also notable.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he looked good. And yeah, it was a shame they couldn't get going. And then they came back. It looked like they were going to, Munster were going to do, get the dirty win away from home again, because they came back in the second half and then they just they fell away. It was really weird.
Yeah, got to 19-15 down, yeah.
Yeah, and then just started giving away penalties and just gave Cardiff their way back into it. And good to see, one of the only positives is just to see Tyler Blaendahl come back. And he was the man who kicked that penalty at the end to get him a losing bonus point. So, you know, his season's been obliterated by his injuries. Like, so it's good to see that he's back and hopefully has a clear run till the end of the season.
Now Irish qualified.
Yeah, yeah.
And not a good result for Ulster.
No.
Home to Edinburgh, and that is, for anyone who isn't keeping an eye on the conference tables, that is going to be a battle right to the end of the season to get to not have to go through a playoff to get into the Champions Cup.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Cooney had a good game again, and this is just one of those games where they just needed to win, you know, anyway by a point. And then Edinburgh, you know, it's going to be interesting for a lot of fans who kind of might take their eye off the league and come back and have a look at the Pro 14 after the Six Nations. They'll see a lot of teams have climbed over that kind of bit of a break. Nice drop goal at the end, and they worked that really well. Didn't panic, just got up close to the line and knew what they had to do. And Ulster, you know, I'd say. It, like, you know, their fans have been, they were tearing their hair out earlier in the season, but things are
everything
going
seems brilliant after they had a thumping win last week, and then Edinburgh come to town, and you know, sorry lads.
Yeah, like, and I think so. That, I think they're level now, aren't they? I think in their
46 seats,
like,
but I think Edinburgh have just gone above them on points difference. In the other conference A, Glasgow are stupidly far ahead.
Yeah.
I think they've already qualified for the playoffs. They're about 30 points ahead of the fourth place team. It's stupid, like.
Yeah.
Now Wayne Pivac said, the Scarlets coach made some interesting comments after the game, and I'm going to use technology here to bring this up. Watch this. See me swipe.
That was a nice swipe. Yeah,
it's a good swipe. Yeah. Apple, if you can fix my laptop, we'd really like that. He said, I'm disappointed we have played Leinster twice in this window, or the Six Nations window last year, and we'll meet twice in this window this year. He said, that is two of the top teams playing against each other when they're not at full strength. I don't think this is clever. So if you haven't been paying attention to the schedule, you've got Leinster and Scarlets at the top of Conference B. Now, even if there was no conferences, we'd expect these two teams to be right at the pointy end of the table. They played this weekend, and then they play in 2 weekends' time, the other rest week in the championship. It's a fair point. We give out about the scheduling of the Interpros around Christmas when we don't get full strength teams picked for various reasons. And the same thing happens in the Six Nations window, and you've got two top teams playing. And yeah, what do you think?
To hear that, I actually was listening to that James Lowe interview after the game at the weekend, and he was saying, oh, we've played him again. And, you know, that kind of jumps out. Oh, that's a bit strange. And then to hear that it's happened last year as well. It's just, it's stupid. You know, like, it's, what are you doing? Like, but two of the most exciting sides to watch, and now they're being deprived of most of their top players as well. Like, to have it on, you know, once during the Six Nations, it's a shame. But then to have it on twice, it's just depriving the fans of, you know, like, two games that would be really exciting and get everybody going. Like, it's a weird oversight, like, you know, or, you know, like.
Well, I'm just wondering, is it an oversight? I mean, they've put them on the gap windows. They obviously want them to get coverage.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted the height to shove them away, let's say there was, you know, a weird conspiracy that we don't want anyone to see these games.
Yeah.
You'd put them on the same weekend as the Six Nations, but this is separate. I don't know. There's a few things. There was one of our listeners, and I forget whose name this was. Was it Kate McAvoy?
No. Red.
Was it the Black and Red? Okay, there's two regulars we've called out. So well, if you keep putting in listener questions, you'll get known here. They'd asked us about this, about the scheduling of this, and it did make me look ahead, and it did make me wonder. The one thing about this season, it's actually a bit of an equaliser. There are so many Scarlets called up for Wales and so many Leinster players that this is a true test of both players' depth. On another season, it mightn't be the same.
Yeah.
You know, it could be much more of an equaliser for Leinster than Scarlets. But in fairness, I think Gatland only let two players back to Scarlets. They got no one back.
Yeah, that was it. That was the big thing last week. It was seen who was going to get released, and Leinster might not have got as many back as they wanted, but Scarlets definitely didn't get back who they wanted as well. It's a real shame to see, but it's great to have other people out there doing our research for us as well, and long may that continue, and keep sending us in your observations.
Equals less work for us.
Yes.
Do you know what? That's why we're not an award winning podcast.
That actually could be it as well.
That could be it. Okay.
The reasons are starting to become clearer now.
Yeah, right. Listen, up next, we're joined by Shane Williams to discuss the big game next weekend.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney? He used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. We are delighted to be joined in studio now by former Welsh wing Shane Williams. Shane, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Pretty good. You're emblazoned with a local stout brand.
Yes.
What's happening this weekend?
Well, obviously, proud ambassador of Guinness. So it's pretty big game coming up on the weekend, and any excuse to come over to Ireland and enjoy the festive time and hopefully watch Wales beat Ireland.
We'll come back to that. One of our local hostelries has been taken over, I believe.
By an entire Welsh crowd of people, is it? Yeah?
No, just one. Just one. Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, Paddy Collins is going to be rebranded and renamed the Shane Williams on Saturday.
Oh, brilliant.
It's what I've always wanted. Yeah. Oh, well, obviously I wanted to play for Wales, but I wanted a pub named after me first of all, and that's going to be the case on Saturday. Hopefully, you know, the Irish public are going to turn up now, even though it's been rebranded in a Welsh name. So
we'll see how that goes. Is that allowed? Maybe it is.
Is it going to be... Does Shane Williams after the game as well, is it?
Well, I hope so. I hope it'll remain Shane Williams for as long as possible.
Yeah. You used to live above a pub when you were a very small boy.
Well, when I was born, I wasn't born in the pub, but I was when I was born, I was living in a pub actually called the Cross Keys, which is still there in the Almond Valley. And
where is that? For your Irish audience who just Wales is this thing over the water,
yeah.
Where did you grow up?
In this place just over the water. No, I come from the Am Valley, which is a small town in the Sticks in between Swansea, Neath and Llanelli. You're still none the wiser, are you?
South Wales.
If it's rugby, South Wales is generally a good guess.
That's
in my experience.
It's down the south there in the middle of nowhere, really. So if I tried explaining, it could be a long show.
But so you started off, and you've got, there's a bit of rugby going on, there's a bit of football going on, there's a lot of gymnastics going on. Like, you weren't 100% on a rugby track for a little while.
No, you know, as a kid, any kid growing up in South Wales wants to play for Wales in rugby. But as you get older, you don't really, you know, think it's going to happen. The fancy kind of fades away. And in school, I played a number of sports because I was a sporty kid. I enjoyed it, and you know, rugby was always my number one sport, but I played football, done gymnastics, represented the school and county at quite high level. But you know, for me, it was always rugby as well. And I finished school. Even when I finished school, I was playing soccer mainly. And it wasn't until my mate started playing rugby again that I decided to take it up. But on the senior level, and I think I was about 19 years of age starting. Probably started from fresh again, and I started playing rugby again, and fell in love with it again. And it wasn't long before I had a professional contract. Really, I think it was less than a season. So
they gave you a car.
yeah, if you can call it a car, really. I had a Fiesta 1.1 that had obviously been in a bump prior to me having it because I couldn't get in through the passenger door because there was a big dent there. But I didn't care, you know. I was living any kid's dream in Wales, and I was a professional rugby player. And you know, if they'd give me a scooter or a skateboard, I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, the it's funny when you look at the different path that people go on now. You know, I mean, what you're telling me is that you're not one of the 15-year-old academy boys tipped for greatness. You've gone slightly different path, and then if you skip forward to 2003, that World Cup, if you're not selected to play on the wing, even though you're picked as a travelling scrum half, your career could go in a very different way against the All Blacks.
Yeah, my story's been a little bit different to everyone else. Yeah, I didn't represent schools, didn't play county, didn't really take rugby seriously until I became professional in 99. And like I say, by the year 2000, I was a Welsh international, which, you know, looking back, I probably wasn't ready, if I'm completely honest with you. And
what do you reckon you were missing at that time?
Well, I was 11 stone soaking wet. Defensively, I had a lot to learn. Physically, you know, players were a lot bigger than me and probably more prepared for international rugby, and the step up from club to international was huge. And, you know, I scored 3 tries in the first Six Nations, but it was difficult. And it wasn't long after that that Mr. Steve Hansen came on board and was the coach and probably saw that and left me out of the team until 2003. By this time, you know, I'd put a bit of weight on, worked on my game, tried to be as physical as I could, and able to compete with the biggest and the best out there. And you know, despite the fact that I got taken to the 2003 World Cup as a third choice scrum half, I didn't really care. It was an opportunity for me to get back in the team, and I was lucky enough to have played against the All Blacks in that group game.
Nice loose game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was great for Wales. You know, we go out there playing one of the best teams in the world, score 40-odd points. Unfortunately, we forgot we had to defend in that game as well, and they scored 50-odd. But it was great. It was a great experience for me, and that was the turning point. You know, I never looked back after that.
When you got home after that tournament, like, did you feel different? Was it a matter of confidence, or is it a matter of people looked at you differently?
Yeah, people looked at me differently. I think no one really expected me to prove any points out there. Really, you know, I was a third choice scrum half, and I was just filling the seat on the plane as far as I was concerned. But I just wanted that opportunity. I knew in 2000 that perhaps I wasn't quite there, wasn't quite ready. But I got hurt when I got dropped out of the team, and I wanted to prove people wrong that I deserved to have another chance. And you know, 2003, that was my opportunity. And when I played the All Blacks, I decided that I was going to leave everything out on the pitch, whether I made 100 mistakes in that game or I did something good. I didn't care. I was just going to go out there and go for it. And that's what I did. And, you know, I managed to score a try. I was heavily involved in the match, and I absolutely loved it. And I remember after the game thinking, right, you know, this is your shirt to give away now. You've got to keep hold of this shirt. And lucky enough, I played the following week in the quarter final against England, a game we should have won, but I won't go on about it. And I had a pretty good game in that one as well. And I remember coming home thinking, right, you know, you don't want to get dropped from this team again. You know how much you hurt last time. You know, keep this shirt, work hard, work on things, get even better, and make it really difficult for anyone to drop you again. And that's what I did. And from 2003 onwards, you know, I just became stronger, more confident. People started believing in my game. And you know, by the time I got to 2007, 2008, 2009, I hit the purple patch and I couldn't do anything wrong almost. It was
decent run. You had a couple of grand slams along the way. And then that 2008 year, if you look down the list here, so 06, Richie McCaw, 07, Brian Habana, 08, Shane Williams, then McCaw a couple of years. World Player of the Year. Not bad for the lad who was 11 stone.
No, not at all. And, you know, I had to work really hard to get that, really. But
did you expect to be in the running that night?
No, not at all. I remember, obviously, the year went really well. World Cup 2007 went pretty well for me personally. Yeah. Perhaps not so much for Wales, but I was scoring tries for fun. I remember going into 2008 thinking, right, OK, new coach, he's going to select me. He's almost given me this free role. Just go out there and just run about like headless chicken, get your hands on the ball. And that's what I did. There was no game plan. And
did you have any defensive duty at all?
I had good centres. defensively, I worked on my game, and it was a lot better than it had been. You know, I'm not saying it was perfect, but, you know, I was in a very good place. And, you know, I knew that I was getting stronger as a player. In 2008, you know, I was scoring tries, had a good summer tour, and I was playing the best rugby of my life, really. And a lot of that was down to Warren Gatland. A lot of that was down to the free roll I had. And yeah, when I was on holiday, when the lads messaged me to say that I was nominated as I was up for nomination, sorry, for the IRB World Player of the Year, and I just thought they were taking the mick. I really didn't expect it at all. And you know, up until then, I didn't even know there was an IRB Player of the Year, because you know, I hadn't come anywhere close before. So yeah, it was a pleasant surprise, to say the least.
I'd say it was all right. You know, 09, it was the great travesty that we call it in Ireland, when McCall run over O'Driscoll.
Yeah, that was... O'Driscoll definitely deserved it that year, and he was disgracefully ripped off by Richie McCaw, and the Kiwis did us over again, yeah?
Absolutely objective viewpoint from the studio. You played with Tommy Bowell on the way. He's retiring at the end of this season. What's your memories of him at the Ospreys?
Yeah, shame really to see him retire. And I think, you know, obviously injuries have played a huge part there. Look, he was an amazing signing for the Ospreys. You know, he was easily the best player there for some time. Was scoring tries for fun and got us out of a lot of jams as well. So, not a great player, one of the best wingers I've played against and alongside. You know, he's had a great career and should have had and done more, really, but the injuries played a massive part there. He's one of these guys that worked really hard, deceptively quick, but a good all-round ball player. And I think you know, obviously he played a lot of Gaelic football as well, and that played a big part.
You read my question sheet.
Yeah, I just see. But no, look, he was a talent, and it was a shame really to see that he's had to retire. Definitely one of the best I've played against.
Did you drop him a text saying, "Listen, they're telling me I'm going playing Gaelic football"?
Yeah, we had a little conversation. I knew that his background was Gaelic football, and obviously I did the toughest trade last year now, and I knew I was up against it, because I'd never really watched the sport. I knew what it was, but never played it. So I was looking for a few tips from him, really, the first thing he said was, "You got to run, just run." and not until I went training and realised the size of the pitch and the amount of grass you got to cover there was just incredible. And you know, for these guys being amateurs and putting all that work and effort in, you know, I took my hat off to them. But what an experience! And it's a great sport as well. I really enjoyed it.
Were you in decent shape? I mean, you went back playing for Amund again, didn't you? When you finished the program?
Well, I tell you what, I done a week in Glenswilly there, and in probably some of the most horrific conditions I've ever played and trained in, and went back and played the following week in a semi-final for my club, the Amman, and ended up fracturing my cheekbone, really, which was I probably had more injuries playing for my local club the last year than I did my whole professional career. That's how rough it was. But look, it's I always promised my mates and my brothers and brother-in-laws that I'd go back and play for my local club when I retired, and unfortunately they took me up on it.
Has anyone ever given you a slightly deliberate injury, say before your wedding?
I got married in 2005, and we had a local derby, and Mike Phillips, who was one of my closest friends on the field there, decided in a ruck at the Liberty Stadium that he was going to give me a fantastic wedding photo and a wedding present, really. I remember standing over him in a ruck, and he turned around and said, "Have this for your effing wedding picture," and punched me in the eye and gave me a black eye. And safe to say, the wife wasn't very happy on the Sunday when we did get married. The funny thing was, he was invited to the wedding as well, so she didn't speak to him all day.
Yeah, one of my best mates was barred from playing rugby for 3 weeks before his wedding for exactly that reason.
She did try, but it was a local derby, and you can't pull out of a local derby.
Fair. She knew what she was marrying. Yeah.
I was just saying, like, you were, like, with the whole thing with Glenswilly, like, you were kind of cult hero in Ireland there for a while, and a lot of talk about you. Everybody praised you for what you did, and you made a great speech in the clubhouse that night as well, I remember. And I think a few people were sharing it on social media. And have you got back to them? Have you been in touch? Have you kept track of them at all?
I've kept in touch via, you know, Twitter and things like that, and some of the lads. Look, I just had I had a great week. You know, I really didn't know what I was signing up for. I knew very little about the sport, but you know, even though it was great, the coaches, the players, and the people of Glenswilly down that area were fantastic. They really looked after me for a week. made me feel warm and welcome. Well, not warm, it was blooming freezing down there, but I was welcome anyway, and I really had a good time there. And when I went out and trained with them and then eventually played, I really didn't want to let the lads down. I know it was a friendly and it was a local derby, but I thought they've put so much effort and time into me now. I really want to have a good go at this game, despite the fact that it was snowing. Horizontal, how that happens.
It's fine summer weather in Donegal.
And it came from nowhere. I have no idea where it came from. I thought, right, when I can eventually see the ball and catch it, I'm going to have to try and have a go at scoring some points. And it went okay. I don't think I've ever run so much in all my life. In training, I knew that the pitch was a lot bigger, that the area was, you had to cover a lot more, you had to get into areas before the ball got there. But match day, I don't think I've ever been blowing so much in all my life.
So before we move on to Ireland-Wales, one word answer. What was the greatest societal impact on you, playing in Japan or Northwest Donegal?
Oh, Donegal by a country mile.
Done, right. Move on. So Ireland, 10-point favourites for the weekend against a team who we haven't beaten in the Six Nations for a few years now.
Yeah, when Andy mentioned that to us, there was a collective shudder in the room. What are we doing 10-point favourites to play Wales? That worries me.
How is Wales taking that?
I think, they'll use that. I think, Ireland, I think, will be favourites. The home advantage, 2 from 2. They've had to work really hard, especially in the first game, to come away from a win there. I think Ireland have started a fire now. They were very clinical against Italy. Sexton and Murray pulling the strings there, and likes of Keith Earls and that playing really well, and starting to look like a real unit. Whereas Wales, really good performance against Scotland, put them to the sword and had to work really hard against England, and could have come away with the spoils, but we're not going to get into that now. So I think there's a confidence in Wales. A lot of new players in the squad that perhaps wouldn't have had the opportunity, have had some of the players not been injured. But I think it's worked for Wales. I think it's a blessing in disguise, because all of a sudden we look like we have strength and depth now. Definitely have confidence, and you've got to take that from Twickenham. Could have won up there. And you've got some players playing with form, and you've got a lot of Scarlets lads playing in that team now that are playing exceptionally well for the club, and are playing some open expansive rugby. So they truly believe they can come to Dublin and win. It puts more pressure on the Irish, really. If they're saying they've got a 10-point start, we'll take that all day long. I can assure you. But Gatland's optimistic. The lads are in good spirit. And we know it's going to be tough. It always is. But, Gatland's record against Ireland is pretty good. And he's all smiles at the moment as well. And I think that kind of filters into the players. So it's going to be a great game regardless. But, like I say, I don't know if 10 points is a realistic. It could be. It definitely could be, because Ireland are more than capable of putting teams to the sword. So we'll have to wait and see.
Do you think that, you've mentioned the number of Scarlets, and one of the reasons for bringing in that many was A, they've been playing really well for a long time, but B, a lot of Gatland's core players have been out injured, but some of those are coming back in now. So Liam Williams, former Scarlet, back fit again, played of the weekend. Is he someone who you'd see them drop straight back into the starting 15?
He's definitely capable. I think, like I said earlier, it's a blessing in disguise that we did have these injuries, really. Not that I want to give anyone any kind of injury and say, it's good that they're out. Wales have been playing with, the same nucleus of a team for a long time, and now that we have injuries, we've been putting some players in, and it's worked, and they're playing an open, expansive game. And
who's impressed you with the step up?
Definitely Josh Navidi. Shingler, the back row's played really well. When you think about the players that's in front of them, Tipperick, Warburton, Lydiates, and these players that have been there, they've really stepped up to the plate, and they've been probably the best players in for Wales. You've got Garth Davis playing at 9, where Rhys Webb would normally play. Dan Bigger's out as well, and George North's been there. We've got some good youngsters coming in the back three. But I think you do need a bit of experience against the likes of Sexton and Murray and these guys. And I think we may see a few changes on the weekend. George North is back fit. He played a part at the end of the English game, and Liam Williams played for Saracens on the weekend, scored a try, and was looking pretty sharp as well. So I'm sure we will see a bit more experience brought into the team, but I don't think there will be that many changes, because deservedly so, they have been playing well, and they're playing a brand of rugby now that suits the players they have in the team.
Hmm. The a game for the old hands, maybe, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you trust me, yeah, I think so. I think you do need experience against, you know, players like Sexton and Murray. They've got a great kicking game, probably the best 9 and 10 in respect to that. Against England, Wales were a little bit disjointed in the back three. A lot of ball hit the ground or was knocked on by Wales because of the pressure they were put under there. So, you know, if Liam Williams doesn't come back in, you've got someone like Lee Halfpenny that's there as well, who there with Rob Kearney as well, is very good at positioning himself around the field to catch the high balls. Liam Williams can do the business on the wing, as can George North. But I think, you know, players like Stephen Evans, who's been playing on the wing at the moment, works really hard, and I think he'll feel really hard done by if he's not selected. So it's a nice headache to have, but you know, we're a little bit blessed in the back three at the moment, but we're going to have to be on our toes in that area, because Ireland do kick a lot, and they're clever kickers. They kick for territory and then they compete, so that's a massive part of Ireland's game.
Well, I was going to say, Shane, someone like you've mentioned him, Rob Kearney there as well. He's a guy that you were on two lines tours with as well, and a guy who's on the other side of 30 now as well, but does the job that he's always asked him as well. Sometimes he gets a bit written off. You might not see that as much over here, but he's written off sometimes over here. Is that kind of harsh, considering when you see him playing Test rugby, he knows what he does and he can do a good job as well?
Yeah, well, knowing Rob and what kind of players and played alongside him and against him, I know he's a very, very, very good player. The same was done with Lee Halfpenny. He was criticised for not being attacking minded enough. And then when he doesn't play, they're like, oh, we should have had Lee Halfpenny playing there, because defensively he's one of the best out there. And, you know, he scored 2 tries against Scotland as well. And it's the same with Rob, I think. You know, obviously he's got players like Keith Earls and these guys around him that are scoring tries and everything. And Rob does the same. But defensively and position wise, one of the best out there. Mm. You know, he was one of these people where, whichever direction you kicked it, Rob always seems to be under the high ball, and this is the work you don't see on the camera, because he's got into a good position, he's moved and he's covered so much ground, and that's a sign of a good fullback, that, you know, the ball doesn't touch the grass, and it doesn't touch the grass very often with Rob. And defensively he's one of the best out there, and they don't realise as well that he covers a lot of ground and makes a lot of yards with ball in hand. So yeah, we don't hear so much of Rob being criticised, because, you know, we respect him a lot in Wales. We know he's a very good player. And when having played against him, he's always one of those guys where it's like, right, let's keep the ball away from Rob this game now. Let's try and get the ball on the ground so he's got to run back and get it. But 9 times out of 10, he's there every time to catch that ball. So, you know, he'll be a big part of any success Ireland have on the weekend.
How would you target this Ireland side?
Well, I think when Wales have done a job, I suppose, on Ireland, defensively they've got to be very aggressive. Line speed's got to be very good. You don't give Sexton any time on the ball. And I think against England, against Ford, and Farrell, we give them far too much time there, especially in the first 20 minutes. So you've got to target 9 and 10. They are, you know, they're the best 9 and 10 combo out there, I think, and you've got to put them under pressure. I think you can attack Ireland with ball in hand. I think if you play with tempo and play with width, you can create things. You know, Italy scored 2 tries out on the wings there on the weekend, so there, you know, there are frailties there. There's not much bad about this team at the moment, I think, but you've got to look at the little things. And I think if Wales play like they did against Scotland and play with that kind of tempo, they will create problems for Ireland. However, Ireland are going to create problems for Wales as well, because, you know, they keep the ball very well. You know, France is a massive example of, let's play 40 phases and have a drop goal just to win it, just for the sake of it. Typical Sexton, really. but that's what they do. They're a confident team, and they can do that. And you know, how many times have Wales been there or thereabouts against Ireland and Ronan O'Gara, Sexton has stepped up? So we know it's going to be tough, and they are going to be a tough team, but they are beatable.
Okay, so we'll take a thrilling narrow win for Ireland, will we, Pat?
Yeah, like we don't have to win by 10 points. I'm happy enough.
Okay, yeah, 10 points, yeah.
That'll keep us 3 happy. Yeah. All right, Shane Williams, thank you very much.
No, it's a pleasure.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
You're welcome back to the Hard Yards. Pat was on the road this week and met up with Ireland prop Tadhg Furlong. Pat, you went back to his roots on this one.
Yeah, proud Wexford man and big fan of the hurling and stuff. And he said some nice comments about that. So he was in good form, and it was really good chatting to him. And in the middle of such a kind of busy Six Nations, but kind of kicked it off by chatting to him about
is he one of those kind of guys who kind of gets back on the road the minute training is over? Like Sean O'Brien apparently is infamous for it. The minute training is over,
gets out of the pail.
Yeah, gets the heck out of the pail as quick as he can in the mud all over him and just gets back home and gets on the farm. So checked with Tadhg and said, "Are you like Sean, the next man out of the Leinster parking lot?"
I suppose I grew up in like South Wexford, but 15, 20 kilometres outside New Ross, which is a place called Camp Hoyle, just outside Camp Hoyle there. And family farm would be quite close to Waterford, just on the border there. So I grew up, it was normal for me anyway. And I suppose it was like any other sort of childhood, I suppose, growing up in the country in Ireland.
And what's the family situation? Who's in it?
One brother. My father has a farm. Used to have a butcher shop, used to be a butcher for a while, and he got a bit of an operation, a hernia in the stomach, so the heavy lifting probably went out of it from there. And my mother's from an island in West Cork called Whiddy Island, just off Bantry Bay, which is, you know, a lovely part of the world in the summer anyway.
Yeah, and did you ever get drafted into any of the butchering or the butchery?
I suppose he would have got out of it, his own butcher shop, when I was quite young, but, you know, people would still drop up the odd deer or, you know, something to cut up like that, and, you know, you've always given him a hand in that sort of regard.
You have something actually in common with Justin Marshall. He came from a kind of butcher's background and worked on the floor, I think, in one of those places as well. He was kind of saying it's a nice grounding for you anyway. If you ever want to look back and think you're having a tough day, think back to kind of the, you know, loading those kind of carcasses around and stuff.
Yeah, and to be fair, yeah, I suppose you want Delphi is quite nifty with a knife. It's quite cool, you know, when they're doing that sort of stuff and the turkey for the Christmas dinner, bones and rolls, and when you see that, we see him at it, it's boning and stuff like that. It's nearly a work of art.
Yeah. And is it a nice place of the world, like part of the world? Like, I kind of maybe been around Waterford and stuff like that, maybe not so much Wexford. Nice place if you're ever kind of recommend it to somebody? Or...
Yeah, down there, I suppose John F. Kennedy would have came from New Ross historically. I suppose his great-great-great grandfather or whoever would have emigrated, you know, he would have been from the parish of Horsewood, where I would have kicked football for a good few years. So, you know, it's a local connection there, the Dunbrody Famineship. Nice sort of tourist aspect there. And I suppose growing up there, you know, you're on the doorstep of a lot of beaches, quiet beaches down the south of Wexford, which is, you know, really nice. Hookhead is around there as well. So, nice part of the world if you're ever thinking of going down.
Yeah, it might be. Oh, yeah. I suppose when you were a kid, was it one of those kind of childhoods where, like, you were out from, you know, dawn to dusk, and, you know, when there wasn't schoolwork to be done, you were just out until it got dark?
Yeah, pretty much. I suppose you take nothing of it when you're doing it, and I suppose it's quite light-hearted up around the farm, mucking around with the father, or out baiting a hurling ball off the back wall and stuff like that, and, you know, it's normal for me, and I suppose probably a bit different from a lot of the rugby lads and how they would have grown up.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when I was young, we had a corner house, we had a big back garden, and one of the things I was always made to do was, you had your chores, but cutting the grass, and it's still something that haunts me to this day if the grass needs cutting. But did you have any kind of chores you had to do every week, or you were in trouble?
You need to get a tractor lawnmower, that's what you need to do, because they're make light work of that. Not really, just help the outfit out and potter around, and, you know, summers were easy enough. Mm. Not out in the fine weather and playing all sorts of games and going off playing hurling football matches left, right and centre.
And we were talking to Dunica Ryan there for the podcast recently, and he was saying that he still sees himself as a hurler who plays a bit of rugby. Is there a bit of that in you as well, like more of a guy man that made it in rugby? Or?
I suppose Dunica probably a bit more pedigree in that regard than I would. Yeah, look, growing up, to be honest with you, I never set out I want to be a professional rugby player. I loved playing sport, and there was no pulling and dragging to get me out the door. And I suppose naturally enough, you grow up in the sort of environment that I did, that, you know, you play for your local club, Horsewood, or, you know, the school good council would have a good pedigree in GAA, and in the winter time you'd play rugby. And, you know, I'd always, in the summer, hurling was my favourite game, and in the winter, rugby was, and that's the way it always went for me.
We had a picture, I think it was last year, but it was yourself in one of the new Wexford jerseys or something like that, and
went
through the roof. Like, it's amazing that interest in it, isn't it? It's like, if you maybe, do you reckon there was ever a future in the gaffer, or do you still kind of, you know, do you ever kind of
think you could have made another career for yourself in it?
No, not really. I would have messed around with Wexford underage teams and stuff like that, but I suppose my body shape wouldn't lend too handily to it. And I suppose the picture of Jersey, that's probably a good few years ago now. Matthew O'Hanlon would have been a friend of mine growing up. Would have grown up, he's captain of Wexford now, would have been in the neighbouring parish and would have been the same year in school and stuff like that. So you still have good sort of ties to the hurling, but I don't think there was ever really a future for me there, no.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you make of how they're getting on at the moment? Or does it have a little jinx or a hoodoo over Kilkenny at the moment?
Yeah, it's buzzing. Honestly, back home is buzzing. And, everyone's talking about Davy and the hurlers. And, you know, it's brilliant. I suppose a county like Wexford, you know, which is steeped in, I suppose, tradition that way. And I suppose the excitement levels that build around the county when the hurlers are doing well is massive. And, you know, you can definitely see the public going around with an extra bit of pep in their step. And, you know, I suppose there was a few lean years there, but, you know, seeing the excitement it's bringing now is great for the county.
And we would have, I think recently one of the lads, Niall McIntyre from Sports Show, was talking to Lee Chin, and he was talking about the whole thing about looking to be a professional now, and that's the way he's kind of going towards it. Now, I suppose he has that bit of time in his hands. Did you ever kind of bump into Lee, or would you ever kind of talk to him at functions or events? Or?
Yeah, you'd see Lee around, and I suppose the first thing strike you is, you know, he's lethally, you know, a big physical specimen of a man, and you can see him out in the hurling pitch. And I suppose Lee is a very marketable sort of guy that way as well. And I suppose he's trying to be at the top of the game as much as he can, and, you know, fair play to him. And you can definitely see the sort of rewards off the pitch or on the pitch for him.
Yeah, yeah. And they, what is it, I think even kind of you were talking about maybe playing a bit at school there as well. And, you know, what type of school was it, like a couple of hundred, or is that even overestimating it? Or
I'm going to pull out a figure here now. I think it was around 750 when I was there.
Then, yeah,
all boys school, again, would have been very successful in the hurling and football. It's right on the border, Newross borders with Kilkenny, so you would have had a lot of South Kilkenny sort of hurlers in the school. Yeah. You know, people like Wally Walsh, who, you know, has a few All-Irelands. Mm. Ger Aylward as well would have been around my years in school. So, you know, very competitive, and I suppose a lot of the teachers there would have coached Wexford at, you know, under 21 senior grade and stuff like that as well. So, you know, the standard of coaching was very high in it.
And what was the subject you kind of enjoyed most doing it? Or
In school?
Yeah.
I would say I'd be very sort of mathsy or pro, like, the sort of process you do to get an outcome. So sort of maths, tech drawing, stuff like that, accounting, economics was sat well with me. I was never so good at the languages, English, Irish. Actually didn't do a foreign language for my leaving cert, yeah. But I was always that sort of way, yeah.
And what, as a kind of school then, was it like a big enough place, intimidating when you first went there? Like, was it a smaller primary school onto a bigger secondary school? Or?
No, so it would have been a lot of, I suppose, country schools leading into the town, hopping on the bus and stuff each day and going in. I suppose there was like all schools, there was a bit of a seniority complex. Definitely might play senior hurling or for the seniors or so on. But, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed my time there from, I suppose, an educational point of view and a sporting point of view as well.
And what was it? I heard, I think it was Michael Quirk from the school. He was saying, maybe one of the principals or vice principals, he was saying that after the Australia game, you dropped down a jersey or something after it.
Yeah, Aidan O'Brien, I think it was. Yeah, Aidan. Yeah, Aidan. Aidan would actually coached Wexford senior footballers there a few years ago. He's vice principal. I was just driving down the road, and I suppose the club in Newross had a jersey, and I just had a spare one going in from the November test, so just dropped one into him.
Yeah, there was actually an image that stood out for me after. I think it was the home game against New Zealand. You played them twice in 2 weeks, but just yourself in, I think you were helping one of the All Blacks with their jersey off, you were in the dressing room with them swapping it around. Is it moments like that, like, do you ever kind of step out of yourself and say, this is just, you know, surreal, here I am mixing with some of the All Blacks, some of the lads, you know, household names as well?
Yeah, you probably do at that stage, because I suppose you never would have played against the All Blacks before, and just their sort of mystique about them, or, you know, because they are back-to-back world champions or, you know, World Cup champions. And maybe at the start you do feel that, but maybe as time goes on you feel a little bit more comfortable and, you know, in control of the situations.
There was a, I remember there was, I think it was after that game, we spoke to you in the mix zone, the Aviva, and so I think it was one of the English journalists who was over watching the game as well, put a question to you about the Lions as well, and it was the first time maybe it had been, people might have been thinking it, but it was the first time it was put out in the open. Like, what do you feel like when you're kind of asked that? Because you're probably still 8 months out from the Lions tour. Do you go, oh crap, here it's, you know, like, or, you know, are you thinking, how do I answer this question and not sound like I'm getting ahead of myself?
For me at the time, I think the answer was somewhere around the lines of, you know, I've only had a few starts for Ireland, or I've only played a handful of Champions Cup matches for Leinster, and it seemed like a bit of a stretch to get there. And that's genuinely how it felt at the time. And I suppose you put yourself under pressure to play well, and I suppose you might have a little bit of inferiority complex about you that time as well. And look, that's generally how I felt.
Yeah, yeah. And the, one of the things I remember about watching the Lions, the DVD when it came out, was it was at the end of the third test, and I think Groundtree came up to him. It's like, you're an effing, you know, brilliant player and stuff. It, does those words kind of sink in? Have you watched that back yourself and kind of taken it all in, even at this stage?
Yeah, we got sent it, and you watch it, and it kind of brings back up memories and stuff like that, because when you're in it, you kind of even forget that there's a camera crew there following you around the whole time. And, you know, to see bits like that, that was obviously a very nice thing to hear. Wig say to you, I can't remember him saying it to me at the time, and, you know, to, I suppose, revoke memories like that is nice.
Yeah, yeah. And the is one of the memories that kind of stands out, because I remember, just if anybody was following from back home or just from anywhere over the world, just seeing you boys then for a few days, just you could finally relax and enjoy it, and doing tours of wineries and going for nice meals and stuff. Is that something that would kind of stand with you for years to come, like those kind of those days that you had?
Yeah, I think what I found was, you know, before you went on the Lions tour, obviously people in your peer group would, you know, say how much of a brilliant experience it is, and, you know, what's so magical about it. But, you know, about 2 weeks in, you're sitting down, you're thinking, geez, this is tough going. You never have sort of any downtime. If you do, you're traveling, you're packing, you're unpacking, you're getting on a flight, you're constantly going. There was a lot of obviously media obligations and commercial responsibilities to do, and you never really had a second to yourself. And I suppose you think of the normal prep for a match week, you know, you're 15 on 15 training, and you know, it's totally different, because you don't have the opportunity to do that with Lions with two games a week, and yeah. You find it really, really tough. And then you cast your mind to the last 3 days, where, you know, all the stress is gone, there's no more rugby, and you're just having, you know, unbelievable crack with lads that you've soldiered for 8 weeks. And, you know, that's a very special memory that you have of the tour. I think a lot of the other players will say the same.
And let's say, just like, I suppose some of the nations, it's the way it's worked out, the schedule that are coming up are Wales, Scotland, England. Some of the boys that, again, as you said, you would have soldiered with, like, that. Maybe let's say coming up next to some of the Welsh lads, did you get to know any of them, kind of become friends with any of them, and, you know, change your perspective on a few of them, I suppose, as well?
Yeah, I suppose you get to know them all, really, that are on tour, because you're living in each other's pockets for 8 weeks. You get on well, you always find with people, you might get on better with some than others, and, you know, it's the same in all walks of life. And, you know, by and large, you find them all, you know, top blokes that you connect really well with. I think the Irish and Welsh are quite similar in our culture and our way of being and around the place and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to be sort of weird facing them in an international environment. You would have faced some of them already in Pro 14 actions and stuff like that, though, already.
And I know Jonathan Davies is going to miss it now, but he was on, I think it was BT tonight, and he mentioned you as the worst roommate. Is there... And you kind of refute these
claims? I can categorically refute those claims. I'd say Johnny Davis was stuck for someone. He hung me out to dry. A prop is easy pickings, to be fair, I think, isn't it?
Everybody just assumes that you guys are just the lazy ones and the messy ones.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. Categorically untrue.
And is there anyone who kind of stands out with you? I know, even from talking to some of the lads, and we often do the show, like Ken McLaughlin would tell a story about Keith Gleeson. He used to play for Leinster as well, and he'd say that... he didn't like any light in the room, like, so you had to have all the curtains down and all the blinds closed as well. Is there anybody you ever shared a room with that's kind of weird kind of traits like that as well? Or
I'm kind of weird about that. I don't like any light. I wear like an eye mask and earplugs now, and it's weird. Yeah, bring me on pillow. Just, Cian Healy has an interesting pre-bed ritual. And I suppose it works for him, so it's fine. But, you know, he puts on the lavender sort of diffuser. Is that what they're called? Yeah, it's a nice smell around the room. And puts the headphones on, sits on like a mat of nails, kind of similar-ish thing for sort of acupuncture. And off he goes then, yeah. Oh, wow. And it works for him, and a fair play to him.
We spoke to, what is it, Dave Kilcoyne there earlier on in the year. I think it was actually around the late December time, and he was talking about, I think he has the bench record down at Munster, and he was kind of saying that he doesn't think it's ever going to be beaten. That's how confident he is, and it's been a few years. Do you have any kind of records yourself in the Leinster gym?
We don't hold records. There's no sort of record boards, really. But I wouldn't say I'm weak, but I'm not extraordinarily strong either. I think there's, you know, some other sort of freaks in the group. You know, Cian Healy's, Andrew Porter's, some of the backs are, you know, ridiculously explosive. But I wouldn't say I'm the strongest at anything, but I probably wouldn't be the weakest either.
Hold your own.
I hold my own. I do enough. It'd be grand.
And what about, and in terms of, like, do you guys ever have to do, or is this from the last generation bleep tests or anything like that? Would you ever have to do anything like that?
No, I missed all that. When I came in first, it was 150s, and they were pretty miserable. We used to do them out in Santry. They were miserable, and then it kind of changes over the years. Got into a yo-yos for a while, and now it's currently... then we got into a 1K test at the start of pre-season, and now it's called the Bronco. Which Charlie, a lot of Irish provinces are actually doing it, but Charlie Arison's ski coach would have brought it in from Australia, and you know, it's a series of shuttle runs. I think it adds up to be 1.2k in the end of it, and you know, that's pretty miserable, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it's about speed then, is it?
It's a bit about, you know, speed, accelerating, decelerating, and then being able to hold that over.
Yeah.
You know, it's out 20 back, out 40 back, out 60 back, five times in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just about being able to hold that speed and being able to cover that distance as well.
Now, we spoke to Bundy Aki there after the game at the weekend, and he was talking about just how, you know, much it meant to him to play in front. I think he's been lucky enough to have three games in front of the home fans.
Yeah.
You know, when you kind of run out there as well, you know, how much does that kind of mean to you, having those kind of the fans backing you guys up throughout the game?
It means a massive amount to the player group, and, you know, when you need a lift, you know, the crowd and support and family and friends in the stadium can do. And I think it probably feeds well into, you know, Vodafone's, you know, hashtag Team of Us campaign, and, you know, to the players knowing that, you know, that represents, you know, family, extended family, parish, where you're from, nationally as well, and the whole supporter base is a massive boost to us, knowing that it's just not us out there, that it's, you know, the nation as well, which is, you know, massively encouraging for us.
And just going back to even that about the parish and where you're from and all, it's like, would it be one of the best things for you, or maybe you can maybe tell me if there's someone coming up through the academy already, but to have another kind of Wexford player or two kind of breaking through in the next year, would that be what you consider to be one of your big achievements over if within the next 5 or 10 years, if another lad or two from Wexford was to make the breakthrough?
Yeah, I think, I suppose, rugby in Wexford isn't massive, but it definitely has certain strongholds within it. And, you know, I always said that, you know, if I could inspire a few more young fellas to get out and that maybe wouldn't play sport or didn't play sport, or, you know, want to try a different sport in the winter time from a GA background, to get out and play with the local clubs in Wexford and raise awareness around it, you know, I'd be massively proud. You know, if players didn't break through, they didn't break through. It's not a massive deal, but if you could get, I suppose, supporting the clubs back home and, you know, seeing those players even grow up to be the idols for another group of young generations that I would have looked up to, say, when I was coming through the club, you know, that would be massively pleasing. Yeah,
brilliant stuff. Okay, well, listen, cheers for that and good luck.
No worries, thanks very much.
That was Tyke Furlong. He was in good form, Pat, warmed up as you went along. Did you start rubbing the shoulders or what?
I was sitting, I think we recorded it as well on video, and if you see it, our knees are almost touching. That's how intimate that chat was. And it was a massively big room, so he's probably wondering, what is this guy sitting?
Yeah, the video guy's going, no, this looks better. You're going, we're very close. Yeah, it is funny how these things can happen, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it was good. And it's just, he is a guy, it's funny to kind of see where he is, and he's still kind of talks about things, so humble about things, but just a world class player. Like
Furlong is, if you get a chance where he's in good relaxed form, he has a little bit of Shawnee about him.
Yeah,
he wants to be honest.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You could kind of feel the media guy going, "Oh no, no, no." He's good. Tadhg Furlong's good.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to take a look at some of the questions you've sent in on social media now. Remember to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get in a question for next week. And also make sure to follow us on Twitter at THYRugby.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. 51 episodes, we have a Twitter account. We're bang up to date
we'll
with
be
social media.
Instagram now after the 100 episode.
Oh, yeah. First one. Jamie McCauley. Connacht losing at home to Zebre, a big congratulations to Zebre's progress, which I think we've already noted, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Or a major alarm in the West?
Oh, well, a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of both.
But it wasn't just like they, like we talked about Edinburgh snatching it at the death there, but Zebre played Connacht off the park and could have won by more. And they just looked like the more professional outfit of the two. Had their stuff together, considering that they've lost a few players to Italy as well. Connacht have, I know they've lost a couple of big lads as well. Connacht should have been winning that game, and they beat Ospreys the week before. This was a chance to do what they often do and just kind of make hay while everybody's off playing the Six Nations, and they seriously dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, it is. It's not great now. They should be doing better than this. If you plugged the two conference tables together right now, Treviso would have 10 more points than Connacht.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Treviso are doing great.
Yeah.
But if you're Connacht, you don't care how Treviso are you doing. You just say Connacht should be better than Treviso.
Yeah.
With respect. You should be saying that.
Like, one of the big things, like, was, everybody, like, the whole country enjoyed Connacht winning the Pro 12 at the time, and the West Awake and the Bonfires welcomed them home and stuff like that, and it was always going to be tough for them the season after when they're playing in the Champions Cup as well. But the fact that they've gone back to being Connacht again, and the Connacht that are disregarded by so many people, and the team that kind of can bring a big performance one week and then not for the next two or three weeks is insane, that's being allowed to happen there again. And
Kieran King won't be happy.
No,
with that one.
No, he'll be livid with it. And they need to kind of, again, they have another couple of games during the Six Nations window, and if they can take advantage of that, great. But a worrying defeat.
Okay, so that'll have infuriated our Connacht fans. Now to infuriate the Ulster fans. So this is from Stephen Rooney, Danny Cipriani and James Haskell to Ulster for next season.
Oh.
Rumour mill starts here.
Yep.
Haskell, no. Right.
Haskell,
so
no.
Haskell will do his damnedest. Like, Haskell is not afraid to travel. Like, you have to respect James Haskell for nothing else. He went playing Super Rugby, went playing in France. He went to broaden the mind, broaden his rugby, pick up a paycheck, whatever you want to call it, he did it. He would not be afraid to go anywhere to keep playing rugby, but he needs to keep playing in England in the top division, and he should take whatever pay cut he can to do that, to make sure that Eddie Jones can pick him for the World Cup in next year.
Yeah, he'd be a year out from the World Cup, and just because he's been around a while, like, he's not exactly old, like early 30s, like, and so he still has it within him, and he's never been that kind of guy to
Pat in this studio. Early 30s is shockingly young.
Yes. envious of a lot of rugby players out there. And so Haskell can still do the job, and he's proven that as well, so it's a bit interesting that they've allowed him to run down the contract as well, but not for him. And then Cipriani, there's talk of almost a pay for play contract over in Japan, 50 grand a game or something like that as well, so that'd be tempting for him. And Cipriani's a guy again who you could imagine him just picking up sticks.
If I was anyone, I would love to get my hands on Danny Cipriani.
Yeah.
He's played fantastically the last couple of years.
Yeah,
really has. But no, look, in jest, well done, Mr. Rooney. Just let the Ulster fans,
There is, like, we've talked about the crumbs of comfort, but like Stewart and John Stewart, Johnny Stewart and McPhillips are doing okay up there. Like, I know the team is in flux at the moment, but it is good to see that those two young lads are kind of stepping up and showing no fear at the level. So hopefully, again, they can kind of get a few more games, and it benefits Ulster going into next season.
Okay. Next one from Noel Lyons. Does Keith Earls get the credit he deserves for his try-scoring record over the last 2 years? So Keith Earls has scored a lot of tries in Test rugby in the last two calendar years. Mm. There's very few players have scored more than him. He's been in electric form, had his little time out with injury, which was not badly timed. He only missed a couple of November tests. We haven't seen him in this good form for a long time. And this is the weird thing. I say that now, but as the questioner says, he's been scoring tries for the last 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was saying, like, he's in, we were in Madden to the Lions last year. Like, he's in Lions form this season.
Correct.
The season too late. But he actually was in Lions form last year as well. And just... maybe Gatland looked at him and came across him on the test stage and didn't rate him, but he was one of the very, very unlucky guys not to make that tour. And yeah, it's not just that he's bringing it now, he has brought it for the last 2 years. And it's a funny one. He's one of those guys you might say he's underrated, but he does get a lot of credit, and the fans of Ireland and well, maybe not Ireland so much, Munster fans love him. Ireland fans sometimes they kind of focus on a couple of defensive mistakes that he's made. You know, he might only make three or four, but they're high profile ones or something.
They generally have been like when he's had to play centre.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
As a wing, Keith Earls, the wing, is almost peerless. Like, he's a fantastic winger. You know, when we saw him as a fullback originally coming through, you know, he's a better wing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He's a player who you can ask to do a job, in fairness, at test level, other than positions. There's not many who can do that. But he's a winger and he's a damn good one. Some really good stuff over the weekend, actually, weekend papers. And some, he's a very open in some of these interviews, including the fact about, you know, he didn't have a brilliant formal education, so he is now concerned about what is he going to do after rugby. That is the stage that he's at. He's been very honest about it. Worth reading back, maybe on your coffee breaks for the next couple of days. Good one here, Shane English. Which Crusaders players should we be looking out for in the first weekend of Super Rugby? Hashtag Rajwatch.
That would be interesting to see now, Raj, because I know there was a self-imposed ban of himself being on the sidelines in the top 14 for a while, and it'll be interesting to see where he pitches up for the Crusaders.
In a helicopter above the ground, safe distance from all the officials. Yeah.
In one of Davy Fitzgerald's little glass boxes or something like that. But it'll be really good to see now. He'll be back. I think he's finished with TV3, and it was great to have him there at the start of the championship as well. And as per usual, he gave some great lines. It was a brilliant one, actually, speaking about Keith Earls, where he was just he was extolling the virtues of Keith Earls before the Italy game, and he was just like, oh god, I'm getting goosebumps here thinking about him, like, just classic Rog, like. So yeah, it'd be great to see them, but that's not me putting off what this actual question was, guys to watch out for. The one, actually, it'd be interesting to see how Rog deals with this guy, the prop, Oliver Jager, who kind of did well for him last year. It was a breakthrough season for him, the Irish prop with Crusaders. So it's more of a reason to kind of, I only saw him a couple of times last year, but maybe with Rog being there, I might watch a few more of the Crusaders games and keep an eye on him. And the other guy is a lad whose pronunciation I might butcher on this, but it's Tamanivula.
I'm not going to correct you on that.
Seta Tamanivula, he's played a few times for the All Blacks already, but one of these kind of highlight reel guys, and you know, almost like he's a guy you kind of, you'll see his tries during the season, like one of those guys. But
I think we're going to see a general increase in people watching Super Rugby first thing on Saturday morning because Rog is around, there's a connection. That seemed natural enough. Right, that's it for this week. Thanks to Pat McCarry and Shane Williams for joining me in studio, to Tig Furlong, Alan Lockdown for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Monday with another podcast, hopefully discussing an Ireland victory. Are you jinxing this? Oh, Jesus. Right, yeah.
Gatland stung. Let Gatland hit
this. Touching wood here, touching wood. So subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.